It's crazy with Simmons because the bottom line is there's a scenario where he is MVP level great. And then, but if he doesn't get to that all NBA sort of stratosphere, I think it's more likely that he's going to be just sort of an average starter, because if the jumper doesn't come through and he doesn't play great defense, both of which were big issues in college, he doesn't make a lot of sense, particularly in Philadelphia, where they're going to ask him to be the savior. And honestly, I'm not in on Simmons, and would have been more aggressive about it, except that like I want to see him try to make it work. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and it's draft season. We got Jeremy Wu on the other line from New York. Ben Golliver, I think, is at Media Day right now. Wu, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good. I can confirm Golliver's at Media Day, and I'm glad to not be dealing with that circus right now. I'm glad to be here.
Golliver needs those hot Deontay Davis exclusives, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder what color shirt he's wearing. I don't know. That type of stuff, man. Like,
I'm just impressed with all of us for staying sane this week. I feel like the NBA going from those finals and diving straight into the draft week is a pretty aggressive move. And I loved your tweet this morning. You said you have a left shoulder injury, a broken toilet, lack of sleep. Draft week red flags have been popping up in my life all week long. Very worrisome.
Yeah, I woke up 2 days ago. My left rotator cuff was a little stiff. It's been bugging me. Didn't sleep well. Woke up at 5:30, went back to sleep. Woke up at 7:30, and apparently someone's coming to fix my toilet right now, but I'm not
That's
there.
That's good so. News. That's good news. You're way too young to have one of those random, just random muscle aches.
Not anymore, apparently.
I guess not. Well, all right. So as we walk through the draft, we've talked about it before. People can go back a couple weeks for our first draft preview podcast. And we tried the mock draft, which I was pretty worried going in. But that worked out. So now I just want to go through players and get your honest take on guys.
All right.
Is that cool?
That works for me.
We'll do it buy or sell. You either have to buy in or sell. There's no in between, no sort of fence sitting. And we can just keep it real here. After 6 weeks of talking about this, who should we start with?
Let's see. I don't know. I'm looking.
I'm on NBADraft.net. I'm still loyal. I don't care. I don't care how big Draft Express and Chad Ford get. I'm keeping it real. The old 2002 standby here.
let's go Jaylen Brown. What do you think? Buy or sell?
Buy or sell Jaylen Brown. I'm buying. All right. It's amazing how this draft process works, because I could not be Jaylen Brown over the past 6 weeks or a couple months. I mean, like, I could not have been less impressed with him at Cal. But the more I think about it, and the more I look at the rest of this first round, the rest of the top 15 guys, let's say, Jaylen Brown has the chance to be a two-way player. And he's got as high a ceiling as almost anyone. And the team at Cal was such a mess spacing wise that it almost it exaggerated his weaknesses, I think. So I don't know. I think if he landed in the right situation, he could really do some things.
Yeah, no, I think he probably got a bit of an unfair shake, just in the sense that Cal wasn't, you know, those late night West Coast games, not everyone's watching. And then the train wreck that was his final 2 or 3 weeks was very well publicized. So it was pretty easy to look at that and not see the whole sample size for him. But I'm not super high on him. I don't.
Wow. Sell.
Sell,
all right,
sell
good.
For me. Definite sell for me. There are just guys who I'd rather have in the top 10. Like, I think when you get to the 8 to 12 range, fine, but I wouldn't take him in the top 5. I just. too many risks. The quote that sticks out to me, one guy I was talking to was just like, at least Gerald Green came into the league with a wet jump shot. And that scared the hell out of me. I'm like, oh, you know, like he's super athletic, but
the difference though, I think Gerald Green was never, I mean, he was always at best a net zero on defense, but Jaylen Brown's body alone will make him a solid defensive player.
Yeah.
And he could grow into like a real stopper.
Yeah, and his body is definitely a plus. I mean, also the other interesting thing is you keep hearing stuff. I don't like to read too much into this, but you got to note it about his kind of like a funky, interesting personality. You know, he's a smart guy. Maybe he overthinks the game a little bit. I think he might have a little bit of those issues. That's kind of what it looked like sometimes at Cal.
Well, it's interesting because he's so smart off the court, and then on the court, he did not look that smart.
Yeah.
So, but that's another reason that I am putting some faith into him now. And it really, again, really underscores how stupid the draft can get, because, you know, if you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have been like, nah, I kind of had a feeling he could just disappear in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, I don't know. Even if there's been talk of him going to Boston, it's everything's on the table.
Yeah, if he can land, I mean, Boston would be a good situation for him because they're not going to ask him to do too much right away. Like in a situation like that, I can definitely see him succeeding and kind of growing into whatever they ask him to do. And it's interesting because I remember in high school, Jaylen and Brandon Ingram, they were kind of neck and neck for a while. And I remember right. I was at, I think it was an Adidas camp in Chicago in summer of 2014, and they were the two like biggest names there. And there was one game where they went at it, and if I remember correctly, like Brandon had like 20 or something, and Jaylen kind of faded a little bit. Not that that really matters, but just that was the first time I saw both of them. It was that week, and
yeah, strictly from an upside standpoint, it's really Simmons, Ingram, Brown, and Marquise Chris are in a category.
You wouldn't put Bender in that group because I would put Bender in that group. I like Bender a lot, like that. In that,
I think Bender is going to be very, very solid, and actually kind of has a higher floor than most of the guys in the lottery. But I don't know if he can be a star. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fair. And I think his game, I mean, if he does become a star, it's going to be in like the super mega role player sense.
Exactly.
And I don't want to be like Draymond Green, but that's like the person that I think about when I talk about that. You know, that's sort of a role that's been carved out is those like weird guys who are cogs, like critical cogs in good offenses. Like I think he can be that. And I almost would
like a glue guy.
Right. But like a really good one. And I almost would rather have that than roll the dice on Marquise Chris. And you know what I mean? Like that's, I guess, how I see that. So like, yeah, that's why I have him so high on my board. But yeah, I think you're right in terms of like superstar potential. For sure.
So buy or sell Jamal Murray?
I'm buying. I think he, you know, we know he can score. He's going to be able to score. And this is not a draft with a lot of like, you know, high upside scorers like that. Uh-huh. You know, his defense, maybe not great. But I've said this before, but I think that you can usually,
that
you can hide someone.
Slow.
Yeah, he's a little slow, but I think he has a good feel and good IQ to where he'll be able to figure it out. You know, he's had experience playing against, you know, for Canada, against pretty good competition already. So I'm not as concerned about that. I don't know that he gets to his full potential, but I think I like his upside. I think he's only, I mean, he's so young still. He's a little bit younger than, you know, Chris Dunn and Buddy Hield, the other guards in that range. So, I mean, for me, he is the top guard on the board mostly because of his youth.
Right.
But I mean, he's doing stuff that, you know, Buddy didn't do until he was a junior at Oklahoma. You know, that was sort of like what Jamal's production was like. So that was impressive to me. And
wait, so you have him above Chris Dunn?
I do, just in terms of like pure big board. Like, I'm not saying he'll get drafted before Chris Dunn, but right, just because he's a little bit ahead of where these other guys were at that age. And because, you know, I think his offensive skill set is going to play, you know, I mean, guys like that who just sort of get buckets, like, sometimes it just translates, so I have a good feeling about Murray. What about you? Buy or sell?
I'm buying.
Yeah.
I'm buying on Jamal Murray. He's taken all kinds of shit throughout mm-hmm. this draft process. I mean, I don't think I've heard a single draft expert who doesn't like openly question his future and call him overrated. However, I mean, look. You look back at the history of guards over the last 5 or 6 years, and there have been so many guys in the top 10 who have had, whether it's James Harden, whether it's CJ McCollum, whether it's, and I think McCollum is probably the best comp.
I like
Jamal
that.
Murray,
I like that.
Although
yeah.
McCollum's a little bit quicker, but Jamal Murray has size to play either guard position. And again, you can even go back to Steph, and I don't think Steph Curry is not the right comparison to Jamal Murray. But the bottom line is that skill matters a lot in the backcourt. And I think if he can find a way to hang in there on defense, he will be a very productive player. I don't know if he's going to be an all-star level player, but I really like... There's so much on offense that I think he'll find a way to help a team.
Yeah, and he can shoot. I mean, I guess I came into the season a little bit down on him, actually. And over the course of the year, he really watching Kentucky more, seeing him get 20 like pretty easily, like on a regular basis to me, kind of turned me on. Like in that sense, I'm with him. I'm with Murray. I'm also buying.
Okay.
Definitely.
Jakob Poeltl.
Ooh, I'm buying. I think he is talented. Like, I think that there's always going to be a place for guys who can like get a bucket on the block. I don't think he's unathletic. I think he gets stuck with that label a little bit. He's got a little bit of an unfair shake in that sense.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm buying as well on Poeltl because he's just taken a lot of heat over the past month or so. And part of that is people just don't necessarily get excited about traditional centers anymore. And another factor is that tournament game against Sabonis has become like the it's in the first paragraph of every Poeltl story. I'm selling on correct pronunciation of his last name. I think we've gotten that wrong hundreds of times on this podcast. It'll be interesting to see how it's handled tonight. He was so productive over the past 2 years at Utah. And if you want to talk about the Sabonis game, like we also have to talk about the game where he dominated Jahlil Okafor in the tournament the year before.
Exactly.
So he will help a team, and it looks like he's going to slide to the back half of the lottery and possibly even further. And I just feel like he's one of the few guys in this lottery that's a real sure thing to be a productive player for the next 10 years. So I'm in on Poeltl for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have to be spectacular. If he's getting, 14 or 15 points and 8 or 9 rebounds, that's fine. Like, I think he's huge. Like I think size sometimes gets a little bit lost when we talk about big men. Like, everyone kind of assumes that guys are the same height, but
matters.
He's big. Like, that's multiple people who I talk to. It's the same thing. It's just like, that's the first thing. Everyone's impressed with his like legit size. Not every center is 7'1". I think he's going to play. I feel like I agree that I think he's a safe choice. It's also a lot of those teams in the top 10 don't really need a center. So I think that also is kind of dropping him a little bit. But in that 9 to 12 range, sure. Absolutely.
All right, so how about let's see, let's go. We're just bouncing all over the
board.
Find
someone we disagree on.
How about Buddy Hield?
Buddy, all right, I'm buying on Buddy too, but like
you're buying on too much.
In a tempered sense, just because like I don't know. So I mean, some of this stuff, like the 85 out of 100 threes thing, like I don't know if I care about that. I feel like that might be the Celtics trying to like drive up the value of their pick. That's why I think all these rumors are coming from Boston. That's my little conspiracy theory. All these draft rumors.
I don't think it's much of a conspiracy theory. I think it's pretty clear that Boston is throwing everything against the wall and hoping something sticks and convinces someone to steal that pick.
Yeah, I mean, first it was Chris at 3 and now Buddy. Now it's
Chris Dunn. Right. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, all right, I'll put it this way. Like, I'm selling on Buddy in the top 5, maybe even. But, like, I think beyond that, like, if someone reaches, that's a huge reach. This is not a hot take at all, but, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be as good as J.J. Redick, but you know that he can make a shot for you. But at the same time, it really depends on need. Like, there are teams that could use him, like the Nuggets or the Timberwolves, like could use a shooter. So I can see that, but you have to just be like aware of what you're getting.
Yeah, I'm selling on Buddy as a top 10 pick, just because I'm worried about him. I think the ideal scenario is that he turns into J.J. Redick.
Right.
But J.J. Redick is great at coming off screens and hitting threes, which is not something that Buddy did a whole bunch of at Oklahoma. And he's also not what really changed things for Redick is that he became a great defender. And that also took 4 or 5 years in the NBA before he was able to do that. So the thing with Buddy is that people talk about him as a 4-year senior, but it's going to take some time, number one. And then number two, there's no guarantee that he becomes the kind of defender where you can start him and get that kind of production.
Yeah, because his all-around skill set does not pop out at you at all, at least for me.
Yeah, and he's a good case where, like, if he were going 20, let's say, like, I would be pumped about his future. But if he's going in the top 10 to a team that's going to really count on him to change things and be like a key piece of the future, like, the expectations are going to be unfair, and it could just break bad.
Right.
So I don't know. I kind of feel bad. This is just sort of like a lot of the guys in the top 10 are going to face unrealistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
What about Luwawu, my guy?
Luwawu. All right. Well, this is, you keep picking guys I like. I mean, I like Luwawu. I think I've gotten really good reviews on him. I think people are going to fall in love with, like, the dunks on his highlight reel.
Right.
But I think he, from what I'm hearing, his skill set, it's pretty well rounded. He's a good passer, good playmaker.
Yeah.
He's played a pretty big role for his team. And that team, Megalex, is like a cool team. They have a lot of young guys and they play really fast. So, I mean, I think there's some statistical inflation probably when you look at those guys' numbers. But I think maybe not this year, maybe this year, probably next year, we'll be able to, like, be a good rotation piece. Like, I like him. I think he's going to slip into that, like, 10 through 13 range, but maybe not much further.
Right.
Like, I like him for a team like that. I know I picked him for the Bulls in our mock draft podcast, and if he falls there, like, I'd be happy with that for them.
Yeah, I agree. I'm buying on Luwawu strictly because I think his body and skill set will make him a real useful third guard at worst. And then there's a chance that he could really put it together, and the threes midway through the year were great and sort of fell off toward the end of the season, the end of the Megalex season.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can get consistent there and play consistent defense, I mean, that's a starting two guard. And in a draft with a lot of question marks, like, I feel like you gotta sort of look for guys who can start and be like a real factor, and that's what Luwawu is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so the biggest mystery, biggest X factor in the draft, Marquise Chriss.
I'm gonna sell. I just think that from where he's being projected, there's so much risk that you're building in. Like, I like the idea of him, but then I keep hearing, like, Tyrus Thomas, and I'm like, ugh, like, that's just making me a little queasy. Like,
he's definitely giving off some Tyrus Thomas, Stromile Swift vibes.
Yeah.
Basically an honorary LSU Tiger.
I think it's a sexy pick to take Chris, but I mean, I guess I can see it. Like, I don't think the Celtics will take him. I think maybe Phoenix takes him at 4, and I can see that because they really need a stretch 4 and they really need, like, talent.
Well, Phoenix is also not in any hurry.
Right. There are some rumors that they're trying to get a veteran with that pick, but I mean, I don't know why. It's not like they're trying to win one for Tyson Chandler now, right?
Because,
like,
Phoenix, you've got Ryan McDonough. There have been rumors that Steve Nash could end up taking things over. So it's always tricky to like, the calculus for them might be different strictly because McDonough needs to make a splash. But if you're building that team, I think it really makes sense to play the long game and, you know, have Devin Booker as a cornerstone, and then try to pick up one or two more guys that 3 years from now you can look at and say, wow, this is one of the rising stars
right.
in the West.
Yeah, and I think they should try to trade Bledsoe or Knight. Like, I don't think there's much upside, like,
Bledsoe
in keeping both.
Is sitting, like, there, and they, for some reason, like, everyone is penciling in all three of those guards to be there.
Right. I mean, I mean, they tried that experiment, you know, the three, yeah, three point exactly. guards. I mean, Booker's obviously a two, but I feel like they got to shift something up.
I'm buying on Chris. Okay. And it's scary, man. We've gotten to the point in the draft process. Like, it was much easier to be really excited about Marquese Chris 2 weeks ago. And now it's like, wow, okay, so we're really talking about him going top five. And he didn't really do that much at Washington. And there's just, he's a complete blank slate. Mm-hmm. And, but I think the top 10 doesn't have many guys who could grow into all-stars. And if you've already lost 55 games and you've landed in the top five, you gotta sort of swing for the fences. And Chris is a guy who could really turn into a true all-star. And that's the rationale, basically, is that none of the rest of the guys who have been mentioned in the lottery outside Simmons and Ingram have that kind of potential, I think.
Right.
So
yeah, I can't argue with that.
For it, man.
Mm-hmm. I see the logic. Don't know that it's going to pan out. I mean, I also don't think he's going to really be a small forward. Like, I've seen people write that teams think he's athletic enough to play the three. Don't buy that. While we're on the topic of like bizarre draft rises, how about Malachi Richardson?
Oh man, I'm glad you brought Malachi Richardson up.
Yeah.
Hard sell for me. I don't understand why this is happening. I watched him at Syracuse, even in the tournament where he really turned it on. I never felt like I was watching someone who could go in the lottery or even the top half of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I'm selling too. I know we keep agreeing it's not max entertainment value, but he just, like, I don't know. He seems so one-dimensional to me. I don't know if he's as athletic as people are saying he is. What is he going to do when he's not scoring? You know, is he going to commit to playing defense? There's always the issue with Syracuse guys getting hidden in the 2-3 zone.
Right.
Always got to point that out. Like, I don't know. I saw him play a bit in high school and like these all-star tournaments. And he was like always, he never really popped. Like, I was surprised he was McDonald's All-American. He just,
and
like,
he's older for his class.
Right, he's old for his class. He's a shoot-first guy. I guess, like, I mean, the rumor is that Memphis is targeting him. Right. And I can see that because they really need someone who can shoot and score on the wing. I don't remember who they actually, like, their last, like, legit wing player was. Michael Dickerson in Vancouver. I don't know. But I don't know,
great,
man.
Michael Dickerson. This entire pod is worth it for the Michael Dickerson shout out.
Yeah, man. I'm also, it's hard sell for me to, I think it's like a worthwhile gamble, I guess, if you get to like 20 through 40, fine. But like, he's not even in my first round for my big board. And I'm not going to be shocked because he's in New York right now and he's doing the lottery availability and he's going to be in the green room, but he might be the last guy in the green room.
yeah, it's tough. And granted, you know, part of this is there's some bias here to, like, we've seen him a lot and he wasn't that impressive. Whereas someone like Luwawu has a real similar build and similar game, but I think he's more equipped to help defensively, first of all. But they're about the same age. But I just, having watched Richardson, there just were so many, like, I only watched a couple Syracuse games, but he just never popped. And maybe this is just a bias against Syracuse guards because, or Syracuse swingmen, because it's been a while since they've produced someone who actually helps.
Right.
They always have these sort of like rangy athletes, Jeremy Grant types. Uh-huh. And it really hasn't been since like Carmelo that one of those guys has actually panned out.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny.
I actually like Michael Gabinje.
That's what I was going to say.
More.
I like him too.
I think he could be a real great like defensive rotation piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see him like going somewhere. I mean, if he ends up on a good team, like Gabinje could be like pretty good early on because I think he can hit an open shot and I think he, you know, can guard a couple of positions and he's a good playmaker and ball handler. He was really good at the combine. He was one of the guys who like kind of popped out. Just, he seemed like he knew what he was doing. Like, he's about to be 24. So he's kind of in that AJ Hammonds territory where it's just like, you kind of know what you're getting. AJ Hammonds, right, is another guy who I kind of like more than most people, I think. But yeah, I mean, I just don't see it with Richardson. I'm shocked. I was absolutely shocked to hear that I saw reports, some scout, there was like an anonymous quote that like, oh, he could be a top 10 pick. Like, oh, please. Like, Don't try me with that. I've devoted too much time to this draft to have him leap into the top 10.
There are a couple agents who are really earning their money this spring. Rob Pelinka with Marquise Chris deserves some kind of lifetime achievement award. And then you've got Malachi Richardson. I also credit to Rich Paul and Clutch Sports for everything they're doing with Deontay Murray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about him?
Yeah, this is a guy. I mean, I've talked about him before. I am buying him. I'm buying the idea of him because I think he's in a range. He's going to fall into a range where his upside warrants a pick. Like, I think big guys with good instincts in terms of scoring the basketball, like big guards like that, you know, always are interesting to me. And he's pretty young. I think there's just a lot to work with. And I don't think he's a non-shooter. I think as long as you're patient and the expectations aren't too high for him right away. Like, I think for maybe one of the teams with multiple picks, if you can take him and kind of let him sit there and, you know, do a year of kind of getting used to things, like, you know, that's good. I think if it's a situation where he's going to have to play a lot of minutes right away, it could be a disaster. Like,
would you take him over Tyler Ulis?
See, this is tough because I love Tyler. All this stuff keeps coming out about Ulis's health, where it's like the discussion is about his hip right now. I know there are some teams that have red flagged his hip. I don't know exactly what the problem is, but it's been reported too. And that combined with the fact he weighs like nothing scares me a little bit.
Right.
And I've been a fan of Tyler since high school. You know, he's from the Chicago area, so I got to see him play. I saw him score like 40 in a game. I mean, he's great. He's a great feel, but I think I would take Murray over him just because in terms of the upside, like Ulis, you know, you might get a really good backup, but the injury stuff is scaring me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Ulis, I'm buying simply because I think that he just has some intangibles that will make him useful no matter where he ends up.
Right.
But it's definitely, I think he tops out as a third guard. Whereas Murray, put it this way, Murray has been thrown into the mix in the top 10 or 11, in some of the mocks I've seen. Mm-hmm. And Deontay Murray top 10, I'm selling. Deontay Murray like 20, 25, mm-hmm. I'll buy, because at that point that is a risk that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got one. How about buy or sell Ben Simmons playing at like 250 pounds? Did you see that photo of him yesterday, the Instagram and his Sixers workout? He looks like he has like an extra chin. He's like super beefy. I'm a little bit scared by that. Like, I don't know if it's just me, but I don't know if I want him playing point guard at 250 pounds, because he's not, this is kind of me just kind of ranting a little bit, but he.
No, I like it.
I don't know. Because like the LeBron comparisons, I think, are kind of off base. But also, I think LeBron is really the only athlete that I've ever seen who can play point guard weighing 250 pounds. Like, I just don't know if Simmons is that. He's a little bit taller. I don't know if he's explosive like that, like another leaper. Like, I'm getting nitpicky.
It's crazy with Simmons, because the bottom line is that he could really be there's a scenario where he is MVP level great.
Right.
And then, but if he doesn't get to that all NBA sort of stratosphere, I think it's more likely that he's going to be just sort of an average starter, because if the jumper doesn't come through and he doesn't play great defense, both of which were big issues in college, mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't make a lot of sense, particularly in Philadelphia, where they're going to ask him to be the savior. And honestly, I'm not in on Simmons, and would have been more aggressive about it, except that like I want to see him try to make it work, and I don't want to be the guy who's like, this dude's gonna fail,
right?
But the some of the questions off the court, like, did you see his documentary?
I heard about it. I have not seen. Yeah.
I got an email about promoting his documentary yesterday, and like, I'm sorry, it's just a red flag. This is stupid. This is like an old person take, but if you're recording a documentary through high school and college, like, that freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah. And so someone asked him about, like, all right, so here's one thing, is I think that the big distinction between him and LeBron is that the biggest thing is LeBron is a scorer and Ben is not, in that sense, just because I don't think his offensive game is super versatile. Like, I don't think he's going to get 19.2 a game in the NBA.
Yeah.
At least not right now, maybe later. But again, point guards without jump shots, we've seen iffy results. And I think it's funny because we're scared off by what makes him unique, but those are also the things that might make him a superstar.
Right. Exactly. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm going to continue sitting on the fence here. I'm not going to be the guy who is like this. This dude is doomed. Partly because I don't want to look really stupid 5 years from now. But there are definitely some worries.
Yeah.
With Simmons.
No matter what happens, can we agree to nickname him the process? 20 years after Iverson, the answer, the process.
Yeah, this is. I love how even after Hinkie, the Sixers are still going to be completely insane. They're counting on Simmons in a situation that doesn't really make sense. They're banking on Embiid's health, and they still have Nerlens and Okafor, at least as we speak, as we record now. And it's going to be quite a ride. We'll see.
Yeah.
Next prospect, though. Let's keep this going. Henry Ellenson, buy or sell.
All right. I'm one of the few people buying a Henry Ellenson. I know that because everyone, I see him slipping in a lot of boards. I like him. I just think that I think he can score. I think he is really talented. Like he can dribble. He can do a lot of things in offense. He's going to be able to score on the block. He's going to be able to step out and hit a shot. And I think there's value in that. I don't think as long as you're not asking him to guard power forwards, you know, if you can have him guard bigs, like that's fine. Like I think the good will outweigh the bad. I'm in on Ellenson. I'm buying.
I'm out on Ellenson. And I'm sorry. I feel bad. But, like, people have compared him to Kevin Love. And I think he has all of the questions that Kevin Love had in terms of his foot speed and whether he that Kevin Love had in the NBA Finals, like, for the last 2 weeks. In terms of just who he can guard and whether you can keep him on the floor against some of the lineups that we see today. But he just, Kevin Love was awesome at UCLA and Ellenson was not on that level. And I think if you're drafting him to be a role player off the bench, sure, like it's possible that he can get there in the next couple of years. But his foot speed just kind of freaks me out.
Yeah, well, I think he's a little bit better than that. Like, I think he's above Enes Kanter territory, Greg Monroe territory, where it's like.
You think so?
Yeah, because those are guys where it's like, you know,
if he can play the five, he's definitely above that. Mm-hmm. If he can be sort of like a stretch five who can protect the rim and guard centers,
right?
I'm more open to him really panning out.
Mm-hmm. But and that's what I think he is.
What's that?
That's what I think he is.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, you know, it's good to disagree. Domantas Sabonis.
I'm out a little bit. I think he's getting projected too high. I like certain things about him, but I think that he's a good energy big. I think he should have a pretty long career. But, like, there's, like, a nightmare scenario where the Kings, and this is not that far off, where the Kings take him at 8, you know, Vlade, you know, keeps it going and, you know, brings in another European guy. And like, I'd like Sabonis, but it would be the most Kings thing ever. So I don't buy him in the lottery. I guess I have him like kind of in that range of my big board because I think he's safe. Like, I think you know what you're getting. I think he's safer than like a Cheek Diallo or a Thon Maker. But I don't think he's going to be a superstar. And again, like you said, the expectations are going to be kind of through the roof for some of these guys, especially at the top of the draft. Because of the relative, talent, to last year where everyone in the lottery seems like had a useful season, it's going to screw some guys.
So I'm selling Sabonis as well. I think he could be a real solid third big man, but most of the teams in the top half of the draft need more than that. And I think his ultimate projection, like he was super productive at Gonzaga this past year. But there are a lot of guys who are productive in college, and then just because they're a couple inches too short, not quite quick enough, don't have the jumper, who then go to struggle in the pros. And I think some of those physical limitations will hold him back from really like being a quality starter.
Right.
But he works hard enough so that he'll help a team.
Definitely. Here's another guy that I know we disagree on, and I'm going to try to get you going here, is Wade Baldwin. I'm out completely.
Why?
I don't see it. Like, why take Wade Baldwin in the lottery, back in the lottery, when you can take Gary Payton, too, in the second round? Like,
all right,
Baldwin, really buy that he's a great shooter. I don't buy that he's, like, a real point guard. I keep hearing stuff about his, like, leadership qualities and, like, weird little things that are like kind of passive aggressive digs at like the way he was at Vanderbilt. Like, I just don't think he's the point guard of the future for anyone. I think if he's a role player, he might be something. But again, I think there are defensive specialists that you can get at a way better value picks. I just don't love, like, if anyone takes Baldwin above, you know, in the lottery even, I'm going to be skeptical.
Okay. Well, so I might be biased. I don't know. My my buddy Jonathan Charks at The Ringer, I've been talking to him about Wade Baldwin for like several months. And we first talked in like January or February, but I love Baldwin, and maybe it's the idea of Baldwin, but like a guy who has just a massive wingspan and will be able to match up with point guards throughout the NBA, which is really, really important when you're dealing with guys like Russell Westbrook and John Wall and Kyrie and Chris Paul. I mean, you need somebody who can guard that position. That's a huge factor for me, is that basically if you're getting someone who's going to help in that area and going to basically, it's like, solve that problem for you every night, that's a big deal. And then I think the threes, like, if he can just be a spot up shooter, he doesn't need to be a point guard for some of these teams. Like, if he went to Milwaukee, I don't think he's going to go to Milwaukee, but like, they already have Giannis as the playmaker. Like, just get a guy who's going to be a George Hill, Patrick Beverley type who can spot up and guard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely see that appeal, but I don't know. I mean, like,
no, own it. If you're not in.
No, I think there's better value.
There's been a Wade Baldwin backlash over the past few weeks, and it's fair because, I mean, he didn't really do that much at Vanderbilt, and you know, you'd want more given some of the hype that he's gotten.
Right. And here's a fun Wade Baldwin background fact that I remember. Northwestern was recruiting him when I was at Northwestern, and I remember he was like a big target for them. And I found out over the years, I don't know if this is out there or not, but I know his parents work for the government. So he's got that intensity to him, the kind of edginess to him. He came from a, you know, disciplined household. So I think, I don't take that or leave it. I'm just putting that out there.
Wait, his parents work for the government?
That is
the
what,
Army?
The government. That's what I heard. Okay. I don't know what they do. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but.
No, that's fine. I think you're reading too much. I live in DC. Government employees are not that intense. But my favorite Wade Baldwin fact is that he's named Wade Baldwin IV. And really, when you take a step back, that's about as Vanderbilt a name as you're gonna get.
True.
It's perfect. Of course their best NBA prospect in years is named Wade Baldwin. the fourth. Yeah. I have a different buy or sell for you.
Okay.
Buy or sell Jahlil Okafor as a being worth a top 8 pick in this draft.
Okay, that's tough. I mean, I like Okafor. I was a little bit too high on him going into last year's draft, and that was part
that's
of
just,
that was
that, that's your Chicago.
Yeah,
bias.
I was gonna say part of that is just my Chicago bias. I like, you know, I like Jahlil. I think, I mean, it really depends who you are. But I think you can justify it. I don't know. It's just tough because the defensive questions are there. Like, we all saw it unfold. Like, the character stuff to me is not an issue. I think he's past it. Like, I hope I'm right.
Yeah.
But I guess it just depends because, like, what team would take him? Like, moving up to move up, right? Like, who wants him? Like, the Pelicans doesn't really make sense. You know, I guess I'm selling just because there's just so much uncertainty and like you have to just provide so much cover for him. Like if you're taking him as a bench guy, he's going to get buckets. That's fine. Yeah. Like, again, we're talking about Enes Kanter territory. It kind of sucks that we're talking about him here already. He might be, I think he's more talented than that, but it's just, he needs to be in the right situation. I don't know what that is.
It wasn't Philly last year.
Right.
I'm buying, honestly. I feel like we've overcorrected on the Okafor narrative a little bit. Like, he still has a ton of talent. And when you compare him to the rest of this draft, I mean, I would rather take Okafor than even someone like you know, Jamal Murray. Mm-hmm. I think the upside there, if you can teach him to rebound, and specifically defensive rebounding, he becomes like super valuable. I mean, he's never going to be a positive on defense. He's never going to be like a real rim protector or whatever. But I think you can get him to a point where like he's not getting abused on the glass, and he's not a like turnstile in the post, and he can really help people. Mm-hmm. Like if he's a net zero on defense, he's got so much skill on offense. He can develop the face up jumper, and I'm kind of surprised. Well, actually, I'm not surprised, because everybody is basically looking at Philly and being like, you have to trade this dude. We're not going to just give you a lottery pick.
Right.
But strictly on what he's worth, like he should get that.
I mean, which team, like say Philly does deal him to try to get another top 10 pick. I mean, which team do you think pulls the trigger? What do you think is his best fit among those teams?
Among the top 10?
Yeah. I'm going to stretch it out to top 10.
If it's tough, because Boston at number 3 really makes the most sense to me. But I don't think they're going to give him the 3rd pick, nor should they, because the negotiation, I mean, just from a negotiating standpoint, like Boston has all the leverage there. And beyond that, beyond the Celtics, but I think the coaching situation with Brad Stevens, they could bring him along and play him in spots next year. And then, and really put him in a position to succeed and make him a weapon. I that's why I like the Celtics. Beyond that, Phoenix could work.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
I don't know if I agree with Phoenix. I don't know. They have too many centers already. I'm a little bit.
Yeah,
3 centers.
Wouldn't you want Jahlil next to an Alex Len type player? Alex Len, Tyson Chandler. I don't know if we can still count Tyson Chandler as a factor in Phoenix.
I don't think we can, but I just don't know if that spacing is gonna kill your spacing, especially when you have.
That's true.
I mean, Booker can shoot, but Bledsoe's not inconsistent shooters. Bledsoe's not really a shooter. I don't know if it works in Phoenix. I mean, I think it's funny. I think Boston. I think you're right. It's funny because everyone knows that the Sixers probably have to trade Okafor, and everyone knows Boston wants to trade 3, and it might just end up as one of those trades. It's like, all right, we can't get anything better, so let's just do it, like get it out of the way. Like it might come down to that, because yeah, everyone knows that.
I think basically Okafor, yeah, his best case scenario is a Boogie Cousins type player, because he's more skilled than people realize.
Yep, 100%.
And he's just somehow we've sort of turned him into Enes Kanter, but there's still a chance that he could be closer to the Boogie side of the spectrum, and people are sleeping on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was a way to get him to a team that really is starting from scratch, like I guess like the Nets or something, just where he would theoretically have a chance to like really be the, you know, the guy and have some type of semblance of a team built around him. Because Philly wasn't really that, just because obviously he was a high pick, but they were already had so many things going on and too
it's
many
just
digs
too
already.
Bad the Nets don't have a
the Nets
single
have not
player
a single
or
asset
pick to trade.
Thaddeus Young can go back to Philadelphia. I don't know.
Yeah, the Thaddeus Young. That's not a bad idea, actually. all right, let's go lightning round since we have to finish up here quickly.
Okay.
Shake Diallo.
So I like the tools. I don't know that he pans out. I just think it's going to take him a lot of time. I don't love him in the first round like that.
I'm an idiot. I love Shake Diallo. I'm imagining like Biombo 2. Considering how it's one thing, like I understand that playing for Bill Self hurts your draft stock, but he was straight up invisible at Kansas last year, and that's not a great sign. But I will stupidly believe in him because, you know, the upside is basically a rim protector who can who will at worst give you 25 useful minutes a game. So I feel like he makes sense in the second half of this draft.
Okay.
Juan Hernan Gomez.
Buying. I'm all in on Juancho.
Juancho.
I like his skill set. You know, he plays super hard, like super, super hard. He's known for that. You know, you're going to get a player competitive, going to rebound, going to be able to hit a shot. He's pretty versatile, and I think he can probably play both forward positions down the line. I'm in on Juancho. Right. I like this European class the more that I learn about them.
He's like a Spanish Maurice Spain. Torian Prince.
So I think he's getting a little bit.
Sell, come on,
I think he's getting
man.
A little bit overrated. I just like when you get into 20 through 40, to me, everything is kind of like a big mess. And
I love 20 through 40.
I like it.
I love 15 through 45. I love this. Track.
I mean, I think there's
top
a lot
15,
of talent.
I'm sick of talking.
I think
about
there's a lot of talent, but it's all role players. And so, like, I think Prince, if you're taking him like. Super. If you're taking him like 15 through 20, I think that's a little bit of a reach unless you really need that position. Just because he doesn't really do any one thing well. He has kind of a funky game. I don't know how he's going to score the ball in the NBA. Like,
whatever.
He's
man.
All right.
He's going to the Hawks.
DeMar Carroll,
like
too. DeMar
in
Carroll,
like
too.
4 years because the Hawks make everyone good. Everyone's useful. Even Tim Hardaway Jr. DeAndre Bembry.
Buying, I'm definitely in. I just think
I'm all in on Bembry.
I think he could even rise a little bit. Like I think he could maybe sneak into the top 20 just because he's more NBA ready than so many of these other guys. He's one of the best passers in the draft for any position. And I think teams are going to like that, especially because there are a smattering of teams in the first round who, you know, are going to be back in the playoffs like and have a chance to improve and take a step forward. And he could be a piece like right away. Like I would love him at 25 to the Clippers. I would love that.
Yeah, I completely agree and don't really understand why he's not going in the top 20 somewhere. And we'll see how it shakes out, but I think that's closer to where he'll end up.
Mm-hmm.
Thonmaker.
I'm out, all the way out.
Me too. Me
and Golliver and you, same boat.
Yeah.
I just like, it's funny because, you know, I saw Thon play throughout high school and I never really once saw him like really dominate a game, especially at these all-star games or like against elite competition. Like maybe it happened. I don't really know, but I just like don't know. Like the good thing is he seems like he knows he's going to be a role player and he doesn't seem to think he's a superstar. Like he was annoyed about the YouTube stuff when I talked to him at the combine. So like I get it. And
yeah,
but I just don't think he's a first round pick.
Useful energy guy, but the idea that there's just all these tools and it's going to turn into something crazy. Like, I don't really know. I don't see it.
Why take him and not like roll the dice with Zhao Qi, like who's 7'2" and an 8-foot wingspan and can apparently shoot threes. Like I would rather try that.
I like how there was a lot of buzz for Zhao, and then there were rumors that he was like 4 years older.
Yeah, secretly
than he said.
He's secretly 24 is what I read the other day. So
that's a great draft story. Demetrius Jackson.
I'm selling on him. I think he's getting a little bit overrated. I think he's another one of those guys. He's kind of like Torian Prince where it's like he's athletic, but there's not really one thing he does well. So I think he had like a decent season at Notre Dame, but it's like I'm not sure if he's going to be a responsible second unit ball handler. I don't think he's going to be a big-time scorer. So I'm a skeptic.
All right. Malik Beasley.
I'll buy Beasley. I guess the concern is he had that leg injury, so there's like a rod in his leg. I think he's going to maybe hurt his stock, but I think he should be a first-round pick. He's a guy who I've kind of come around to the more I think about it, just because I think he has a nice offensive toolbox. And, you know, in this draft, you know, you can do a lot worse than, you know, an athletic shooting guard with who's pretty young, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like in the 20s, he will make sense for somebody.
Totally.
If he slips to the second round, like that's some team is going to feel really good about bringing Beasley in. Bryce Johnson.
I'm selling.
Oh man.
Well, I don't know, man. He's never really popped to me. Like he had a good senior year, but that doesn't like over, I don't know. It doesn't like wipe away 3 years of super inconsistent play. Like I know you watched a lot of that. Like, I don't know, man. He doesn't do it for me.
I think he can help somebody. I'm obviously a biased Carolina fan, but not so biased. I mean, I recognize Harrison Barnes' limitations, but Bryce has. It's strange to me that teams are more excited about spending 4 years developing someone like Thonmaker than just plugging Bryce in as a third or fourth big man and getting 15 to 20 minutes of useful bench play from him.
I just don't think he has a lot of upside. Like I'd be shocked if he's ever as good as like a Taj Gibson, you know, because Taj at least has that jump shot. Taj is a reliable defender. I don't think Bryce has either of those things.
Taj is definitely the ideal scenario.
I would love, if he becomes Taj, then it's a great value pick, but I don't think he becomes that. I think there's a long way to go.
Patrick McCaw.
I'm in. I think he has a nice skill package.
Everybody's in on Patrick McCaw.
Yeah,
I'm out strictly because I feel like too many people have said that he's like the biggest sleeper of the last 15 of the last 15 picks of the first round. And I don't know. I mean, if he were that good, we would have spent more time talking about him all year.
Yeah. I mean, UNLV, they had a weird season because the coach got fired.
Yeah. And, the coach got fired.
I mean, they've been a program that's like turned out pros, but has never been like as good as, except for in the 90s, that one stretch, they've never really quite been as good as they should be. So I don't know. From what I know about him, like I saw him play a lot in high school because he played with the Chicago area. He's from St. Louis, but he played with the Chicago area AU team. So I saw him a lot and he like never popped out to me then. And I was shocked to find out that he was a draft prospect. But the more I thought about it and the more I didn't realize he was now 6'7" with a 6'10" wingspan. So
yeah. Yeah. The tools are definitely there. Yeah.
So they're worse. You can do worse. Almost rather have him than Malachi Richardson.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They're basically the same deal, except that you can get Patrick McCaw 10 or 15 picks later. And in that case, like, sure, the value is much higher. All right, last one. Gershon Yabusele?
We're selling on the pronunciation.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I have never seen him play, so I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. Can I push on this one?
That's fair. I feel like that's a healthy place to close things off because I also have never seen Gershon play, and neither one of us have any idea how to pronounce his name. And he will probably go somewhere in the first round tonight. So the draft is here.
It's
ready.
Absolutely here.
All right, man. Well, hey, enjoy the rest of the day. I don't think you're going to make it to media day, but enjoy the draft. And I know you and Golliver are going to do a recap podcast on Friday. I'll be traveling.
Yeah.
But this has been fun. This has been a fun journey.
Absolutely.
With your big board and my mocks. And now it gets real.
We'll see how many we get right. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't have high hopes. But all right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Catch you later.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Floor. You can follow Andrew Sharp at Andrew Sharp and Jeremy Wu at Jeremy Wu. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. And you can hear the whole SIA podcast network at si.com/podcasts.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.